to Inner Space, your 2023 annual readings from Eric Francis. That's me. This is, of course, the audio bit. I do this part of the reading without studying what I've written before, so it's a fresh look at the chart, intuitive as such, and it's good to be with you here. 5:06 p.m. on Christmas Eve on a freezing night in New York. I am experiencing a little bit of vocal and respiratory distress, minor. I have minimally medicated myself, and I've got my Virgo canine, Jonah's pint-sized humidifier blowing in my face. I think mostly I'm experiencing the effects of all of this dry air and forced air heat. My bank branch manager had his kid in the ER last night, thinking that the kid had one of Fauci's viruses because he was wheezing. And I said, well, the air's dry. There's no more carbon dioxide uptake. The dust is all flying around. It's freezing cold, and there's no humidity. I'm trying to remedy that here. I've got this beautiful little blue gadget misting over my desk. Before I get into the astrology of the abundantly interesting astrology that seems to contain some solutions to puzzles, not just more puzzles. I want to acknowledge the difficulty of being a sensitive person at this time in human history. It is not easy, and we have been subject to, we as a society and as individuals have been subjected to, some truly brutal abuse the past few years. And in the style of abuse, it was packaged as a good thing. They were only here to help us. And you have been living with this opening coming to you from Pisces, of Neptune making its way across your relationship house the past more than 10 years. You already live in a world you want to be tangible, grounded, earthly, earthy, and reasonable. Virgo. Great at math. Squish your toes in the mud. And math or proofreading. And opposite Virgo is the other part of your sign, the other part of the dynamic polarity resolution system known as a sign pair. And even though Robert Hand once said to me about Alice Bailey, the author of Esoteric Astrology, that she sure didn't know very much astrology, that sure is a good idea, that the sign pairs work as one system. And in the other side of this highly evolved and refined concept of Virgo is this boundless, amorphous, idealistic, beautiful, colorful, but impossible to grasp thing of Pisces. And you've had Neptune going through there for a decade, and Neptune does several things. Neptune creates an opening, meaning a vulnerability, to the point where on numerous occasions with Virgo, with Neptune present in the chart, I've said, is your front door locked properly? No, I've been meaning to call the locksmith. That kind of opening and vulnerability, and also a psychic opening. And then the other thing that Virgo particularly, excuse me, like I say, I'm a little slightly off, but I'll correct myself, hopefully, if I make a mistake. The other thing that Pisces does with Neptune, that Neptune is doing in this context, is creating a sense of isolation which may not be real. So it took me a while to figure this out. But Neptune creates this sense of isolation. Like, if you're doing astrocartography, if you're going to be on a Neptune line, you might find that it feels like a lonely place. And then when you've moved on, gone somewhere else, you might realize, wow, I really had good friends there. And also, it can come with a sensation of confusion and lack of clarity in the very place where most people want their the most clarity in their relationships. So the news is that Saturn is now going to enter this picture. And though Neptune has kind of left in its wake this a lot of questions and mysteries and unresolved matters, Saturn is entering the picture in March for 2.5 years that will put a clarifying lens in front of this whole dimension of your existence, which includes the way that you just look at the world when you stand at your height, not on top of anything, not at your desk, but standing up and walking around and looking about and talking to people and looking at the things you see on the street and assessing the ways in which they do and don't make sense. That's very seventh house. Classical astrology tells us that the seventh is about partners, whether marital or business, and open enemies. Lovers and other strangers, I guess. But no, open enemies really is an interesting angle of the seventh. And it has something to do with the open friendships and partners, right? The partners that are known, not the ones that are secret partners, silent partners. The seventh is out in the open. But Neptune and Pisces have a way of putting the seventh behind this kind of mystery veil that you've always lived with. But now, the past 10 years, this is Neptune is quite a mystery veil. And Barbara Hand Clow, in a recent talk, stole the words out of my mouth, which she's entitled to do because I've stolen quite a lot of words out of her mouth, that Neptune in Pisces is the elephant in the room. And so if you've been wondering why the holy living fuck everyone just seems so delusional, why they're willing to accept things that make no sense as perfectly logical, we might kind of run that back through an assessment of the influence of Neptune in Pisces. So this has gone on for quite a while. This is like 2011 or something, this starts to happen. And what is so cool about Saturn entering Pisces is that it's going to be there for the duration of Neptune in Pisces. So now there is a permanent, to the extent of for the duration of this long transit, like the last kind of 20% of it, there's a mitigating factor. There is a thing that will help you have some tangibility, something you can count and count on and assess, and that can push on you in a way you're knowing you're being pushed on, and you can push back on it and you know you're, in a way you know you're pushing back on it. And there can be some, let's say, credibility to the exchanges of the seventh, instead of all of this, like, things morphing in and out of a kind of a fantasy or alternate dimension. I mean, it's, you know, it's a bit beyond description. But because I've got so much Pisces and I'm such a adherent of the wisdom of the 12th house, by far the strangest and most mysterious house, followed in close second by the house I'm about to describe, the 8th in your chart. I have the sense of how it feels, and it's almost like living in a dream. And what Saturn is likely to do is to bring some tangibility to that dream and some substance to it, and to also help clear the fog that may have been worse or better at different times, but has been a persistent, matter. And Saturn came through Pisces in the 90s, early mid-90s, like starting around 93. But Neptune wasn't there. Neptune was someplace else. And here we have Saturn not only returning to Pisces, but answering the confusion of Neptune. And so not everyone's going to like this. There are people who prefer to be in la-la land. And there are people who live their relationships through a denial filter, for whom this transit will certainly come as a rude awakening. But if you're someone who prefers what is real, this is going to be a good one. And I happen to be a fan of Saturn, and never trust an astrologer who's not. Just send him packing, because we humans have to deal with the necessities described by Saturn. You have nothing without your bones and your skin, which are Saturnian matters. There must be a containing and defining structure within this apparently somewhat anarchistic universe of various energy fields intersecting and creating us. And I don't think this will go to the place where is a negating of your imagination or your idealism, but rather serving as a kind of a wake-up call to embracing what is necessary and what you're being called upon to do, particularly in your relationships. Now, the relationship story continues, and it finds really deep expression in the next house from the seventh, which is the 8th. And this is an especially important house for Virgo, and it is central to my entire theory of Virgo, the placement of Aries in the Virgo solar chart, the amazing tool and resource in astrology of the solar chart, the chart for the sign, not for the person. We're all subject to both, or described by it. And when the eighth house is where the seventh house finds its consummation as some kind of a contract or sexual experience or understanding, marriage, inheritance, dowry. The eighth is where families join through the phenomenon of in-laws entering the life, right? The person you're with comes with their entourage. And the curious and eminently descriptive thing about having Aries on the 8th is that it is my sense that where Aries exists in any chart of a person describes where they're going to seek their being. They're going to seek their true sense of who they are and their desire to actualize who you are. And so this takes place in a transactional house of relationships. So it is the ultimate gestalt in the spirit of Fritz Perls of the relationship becomes the vehicle to finding out who you are. The problem with that is that sometimes you find out who you are beyond the scope of the relationship, and then you have to be independent again because Aries always wants the measure of independence, and you can't exist in that context. And then you have to separate from the relationship so that you can be this newly formed, actualizing person that you're becoming because there's not room in the relationship. So this is the phenomenon that I've seen in many other expressions of the in-the-relationship version of the person and the out-of-relationship version of the person. These can be very different manifestations of the person. And I would propose that part of self-actualization is either being consistently the same person with everyone from person to person. That's a measure of integrity, I think. Or recognizing that you are a slightly different expression of yourself with everyone. You're going to manifest in a slightly different way, or sometimes even radically different way with everyone. But I would suggest that keeping hold of the common thread that runs, that is you, and therefore should run through every relationship, is essential. And there really shouldn't be a very big difference in how you express yourself with different people. And I think the world would be a happier place if people were more consistently honest about who they are with everyone in their life and not do so much custom tailoring of themselves to match everyone, which is different than slightly different self-expressions. There's a lot of custom tailoring going on. And then there's often that place of, oh my God, what if this person finds out I'm not really that? Or not really that person. So this has been highlighted in the past 4 or 5 years by Chiron in Aries. So this has raised this to a kind of a critical mass point where I think that my early predictions for this transit would be that the in the relationship, out of the relationship phenomenon would have to cool off, and that Virgo would be kind of given a crash course in the I am me at all times school of relationship. One other crucial thing about Aries is that I think it is essentially the scene of the crime of humanity being taken away from us by first the electrical realm, but particularly the digital realm, which are deeply tribalizing, de-individuating. And so, humanity has gotten to this point where there's almost no thing as individuality anymore. There's almost no such thing as a relevant person anymore. People can cling to stories from the past, but relevance is being crushed. And worse than that, the sense of being a worthy, relevant person necessary for basic self-esteem is also being crushed. Part of what you get through Aries on the 8th is the feeling of being an important person to someone. What I would suggest is that you be aware of the ways in which you are a bit integral to everyone that you know, and not in the sense of having power or any undue recognition, but rather, you know, you're a distinct facet of the cosmic puzzle. And to proceed as such in a kind of a grounded and humble way. And notice the people in your life who treat you as if you're relevant. And I mean, it could be the person who runs your favorite fruit and vegetable stand, who makes it clear that they value you and like when you show up, even if you just buy an apple or stop by to say hello. So what's exciting about all of this is I've mostly described these slow-moving influences, the quickest one being Saturn, which moves at exactly the right speed to help us learn exactly what we need to learn from its placement in each sign and house for just 2 or 3 years. But Jupiter has been sweeping through this relational quadrant of your chart and has just re-entered to stay for now 4.5 months. Your 8th, where you experience yourself through the context of significant others and their family or entourage. Never hang out with a rapper if their hype men don't think you're cool. Find another rapper. But with Jupiter there, you can feel your presence places. I was once writing a horoscope for Marie Claire magazine. And after a while, I started to get the feeling that the place was run by a bunch of 22-year-old girls whose feet didn't touch the floor when they were sitting in their desk chairs. And I once put into a column, "Feel your own presence when you walk into the room." And this sub-editor who was editing the column said, "I don't know what you mean." I'm like, uh-huh. So Jupiter gives you some substance. It's been in Pisces, which has helped answer the Neptune problem. But in Aries, it's going to be present to the point where you may feel like there's something to draw on. There's some sense of substance or matter, which is energy, to draw on, right? That you don't have to conceptually feel your presence. You can feel like, oh, you walk into the room and people are happy to see you. I mean, that's not always true. A lot of times you're not noticed, but the reality is when you walk into any room, you change the shape of the entire room. Just geometrically and energetically. It's a different place with you there. And you're aware of it. Your consciousness is shifting everything. It's not merely your subjective viewpoint. There's an intersubjectivity where your awareness of the situation actually shifts the situation. So, Jupiter sweeping through there. Now, there is a, there's a, I think, relevant and somewhat unexplored, though I've probably done more to explore this point than most, and I've got an article about it. Let me see if I can link that for you. And it's, the point is called Salacia. And Salacia is not about salaciousness. The sea nymph Salacia, who becomes the consort of Neptune, was quite a proper woman. I believe she was a virgin. Neptune, the great god of the sea and of rivers and of earthquakes, one of the supreme gods on earth. We're talking about seas, rivers, and earthquakes. What's left? Mountains. Had to court her very carefully to make his overture to her. So to me, Salacia is more about the appropriateness of a sexual exchange more than anything. And that does not have proscribed rules for all of humanity. It is very individual to your growth level and to your needs and to the cultural situation where you find yourself, the context in which the your experience of yourself is framed, and that's including the person that you're with. But I think the really meaningful thing about Salacia is that you have to set the terms of your own appropriateness and make sure you know that that kind of graph or model goes in many different directions. It's not simply that being a prig is appropriate, as we're often taught to believe, right? Well, there's only one way to be appropriate, and that's button your shirt up to the top collar and keep your knees together. No, you set the terms, and there's a growth process involved here. There's a self-actualization, self-exploration process going on with Salacia, and there is a healing process going on with Salacia, since in some way or another, no matter who did it, usually it was done a few times, someone has violated us. Someone has co-opted our sexual power and sold it back to us. Someone has conned it out of us in some way. Someone has specifically violated all of us. All of us. At least once. And we live in a culture that's inherently sexually abusive. By which I mean, we've grown up under the influence of religious morals. And so most of us are holding on to some caricature version of religious morals when really, as far as I'm concerned, and I am a child of the 60s and I'm a student of the Fritz Perl School of Therapy more than any other, that expressing your sexuality is necessary. It is necessarily an experiment, that there must be boundaries crossed and tested as part of that process. And the most important boundary of them all is the one about who you are as you're growing and changing. All right, so Jupiter comes through here. And we'll make a conjunction to Salacia. All this goes on in a very short time, basically between January and April, to Salacia, enlarging that group of ideas, then to Chiron, enlarging that group of ideas, then to Eris. And I think the Jupiter-Eris conjunction is the one about, who is this new digital me, and who is the original non-digital me, and who would I be like in 1800 if I wasn't digital? Do you ever play that game? If I wasn't living in the modern world, if I was transported back to, colonial America or the Roman Empire, who would you be before all this electrical stuff? And to experiment with that entity as a kind of a character that you can do some context experimentation with. And there are plenty of people who feel like they're living in the wrong century. And if you do, this is a good opportunity to remember the century that you feel like you belong in, and also then say, I am this person from the Roaring Twenties. Here in the not-so-roaring 20s, of the 21st century. All right, so let's pause for a minute. I'm going to take a sip of tea and let's play a little music, and then we're going to follow Jupiter up into your ninth. Spirituality and travel and wisdom and relationship to God and learning as in education and learning through travel. And then let's talk about Mars retrograde in your 10th. All right, so Mr. Music, please. Part of what makes Virgo an Earth sign, besides the fact that it just is one on that chart that Ptolemy gave us in the first century, or Eudoxus of Cnidos, or who said, "Oh, officially it's an Earth sign," is that your spiritual frame of reference in the ninth place of your solar chart is covered by Taurus. So this is like the religion that you would find out in a forest. When you don't find the religion in a forest, you may find it in a kind of formal setting that is stable. I don't know about you, but the thing I like the most about visiting old churches is that they've been there for a while. And this holds true for the Pyramid at Giza and the alligator initiation pond in the Egyptian desert and, St. Patrick's Cathedral. You've been there for a while. And so Taurus is the thing that wants to be there for a while. One thing that you've had the past few years is Uranus going through here, which has led to a little chaos spiritually, but also a questing spirit, and then also a questioning of the moralism of all of these religious, traditional religious approaches. And so there's been some rebellion against your religious background, certainly in principle and in potential, and I hope in truth, because we do need to wage rebellions against these backgrounds. And while not so many of us can claim to have an orthodox background, right? We weren't necessarily all raised like, especially in the 20th century and into the 21st century, there's not a lot of orthodoxy left, but there's remnants of it. There's tailings of it. There's the influence passed through the generations that typically manifests as a kind of a moralism. And you don't need that. You need to determine what's actually right for you. And so I think that Uranus has been providing you an ongoing series of opportunities to suspend or challenge the imposition of someone else's value structure on you, and has opened up the possibility that you will learn through your rebellious tendencies. You'll learn through your rebellious tendencies. And so that's been going on. And the topic of sexuality comes up again because QB1, Albion, now it's called Albion, the first planet ever discovered beyond Pluto, QB1, 1992, QB1, is about the direct encounter with the spiritual nature of sexuality. And remember that we almost always get sexuality in one of three forms. Either it's about possession. It is about morality, or it's about porno. Can we cancel all of those, please? And have sexuality be about an exploration of our connection to existence? And I think that's what QB1, moving through this most distinctly spiritual house, because it is a spiritual house, because it is about your personal relationship to creation. That's the ninth, in my view. It's been passed down to us from antiquity as the affairs of the church. But the affairs of the church are just a coffin built around the experience of revelation and of the inherently divine nature of everything, including you, and the things you want to do and curious about. And the experience of yourself as a sensual being. That's Taurus on the ninth. It's a fabulous sign to have on the ninth. If you can get out of your head and be in your physicality and have those breakthrough experiences where you realize that through sexual experiences you are fully experiencing the creative divine power and expressive divine power of your sexual being. It's a nice extension of the I will find myself in you property of your eighth house, Aries, to move into I will be part of this beautiful, wondrous stardust mosaic that we are all living in. So Jupiter shows up and then for a year really gives substance to this. So a great time to move around the planet, to explore, and to experience your beauty as nature. It's not of, like something else. It's your personal, this miracle of your, you know, 100-ish pounds of clay dancing around on the planet, like with this lightning bolt of consciousness running through it. I mean, what the fuck? You know, your pencil doesn't get up and dance around on the desk unless your hand is doing it. So what's that? What's the doing it? What's that lightning bolt that picks up the pencil and then draws something? Well, the lightning bolt, Uranus, is going through this place. A couple of more years, too, like three more years. QB1's going to be there for a hell of a long time. And it is saying, at least 10 more years, saying, hold the idea of that. The idea that this alchemical point of union between you and the cosmos is your consciousness animating your body and your senses. This transit peaks in April of 24, so that's a good time to plan, like, something super fun. We'll see what condition the world is in. All right. Another defining property of Virgo, by way of the solar chart and my studies of Virgos, is the dual career, the dual sense of mission, purpose, and identity that is described by having the other Mercury rule sign on your 10th place. And this is, you know, my favorite example of this is Virgo Sun, Virgo Rising, Betty Dodson, who in one of her incarnations was one of the most masterful artists I've ever encountered. I mean, I've seen some of this work in person, pencil drawings, speaking of pencil, that were, you know, she'd have to kind of stand on her tiptoes and look over the top of the painting, of the sketch, when she was standing in front of it. Beautifully, meticulously detailed. And the author, writer, sex revolutionary who personally imported the pussy into feminism. We've heard these stories right from her. Feminism was just going to go down this women's studies academic, rules-based head trip. And Betty shows up with like 100 slides of vulvas that she somehow convinces the National Organization of Women in New York City or San Francisco, whichever it was, to pack an auditorium with 1,000 women and shows these slides on the screen. Whereas right before that, they were thumbing their noses at her. So she had this perfect dualism in her career as like essentially artist, writer, party host, revolutionary. What she could do that most people can't do is to weave that together into one unified expression of herself. Most people are like, well, I'm this guy here and I'm then that guy there. Don't talk to me about that stuff. Don't talk to me about being a grease monkey in my garage taking apart my motor scooters when I'm over here doing this thing with like theoretical physics research. What Gemini wants to do is to have those be one dynamic system. And so one of my, let's say, highest aspirations for Mars moving through your 10th house, Gemini, since August through March, August 2022 through March 23, is that there'll be some perforating this non-existent division between you and you. So where there's Gemini, there's this twin phenomenon, right? And so this is wherever Gemini is going to be this twin phenomenon going on. And you have it in your expression of reputation, of highest aspiration, of what you want to be known for, and how you handle authority from above and being above. And so Mars here has been motivating. It has been potentially inspiring of some conflict, but also resolving that conflict. And more than anything, Mars moving through the 10th, making the series of squares to Neptune that I've written about pretty much in every sign, has been about challenging your relationships. I'm going to put that in pink pencil. Challenging your relationships to honor your true independent goals as a person, not bound by the previous constrictions of the relationship, which can be considerable. When I was very young in astrology, I was working with a young woman, she's probably in her early 20s. I was probably 31, 32. And what she said to me once really almost made me fall off my chair. And maybe everyone knows this and I'm the last one to find it out. But she said that her boyfriend wouldn't let her attend community college because he feared she might meet someone at community college and move on from the relationship. Like, yeah, it sounds about right. I suggest you enroll tomorrow and spend a lot of time at the cafeteria and in the library and doing extracurricular activities, because that sounds like he came up with the plan. I do not know what she did. Obviously, I was encouraging of her stated desire to do something with her life. But relationships often have a way of creating this scenario, which is a bit Aries in the eighth, who the person is becoming conditional on who someone else wants them to be. So Mars is an extension of that Aries eighth house. It's almost like Mars has burst out of that Aries eighth house and is going to do things on its own. And so what I think this is encouraging of is to be who you are despite the expectations that you think people have of you in your relationships. And to, though this is difficult for some people, I get it, to place a higher value on the being who you are than is placed on the expectations. Because the expectations are just basically just death warmed over, and people are in love with them, and it's like let's get over this. There comes a point where we just have to learn from dogs how to live the day and be loyal. And humans really need to learn how to be loyal to themselves. And I don't mean self-obsessed, and I don't mean narcissistic or vain or anything like that. I mean loyal, true to your own cause. True to your own cause. All right. So Mars does its thing, and then a whole bunch of things happen when this Mars retrograde is over. It makes the final hook to Neptune, the final kind of in the, for this cycle, and I don't know when there's ever going to be another Mars retrograde square Neptune. Could be in centuries from now. It could be 100 years from now. It could be, you know, grandkids generation, I don't know, whatever. But it's special, distinct, unique, happening now. And then in March, a whole new era begins. And that includes Pluto entering Aquarius, which I haven't talked about yet. We should probably wrap up on that. Saturn entering Pisces. That's the clarifying of Neptune. Mars making the final square to Neptune and entering Cancer, that's another clarification of Neptune, another clearing of the fog. And then Mars enters Cancer, your 11th house of social reality, and reminds you of the most important thing to know about your social existence, which it is to you to be happy. There is something about your social presence that must be about taking care of people. Must be about taking care of people. And that's Cancer on the 11th, right? That's, to you, that's friendship. So those are the friendships to nurture, where you either feel a strong pull to take care of someone feels a strong pull to take care of you in a way that works for you, or there's a mutuality to that experience. Pluto entering Aquarius is it's going to change your whole approach to your daily working experience. And here too is a conformity issue. It's very interesting how many conformity challenges exist in the Virgo chart, in the Virgo solar chart. When you take the signs and you place them like that, they are with Virgo first house, Libra second, Scorpio third, Sag fourth, Cap fifth. How many of those challenges are about living your distinction and not not letting others define you. So it's easy for others to define you where work is concerned. This is Aquarius on the 6th. And what this can do, I think working at its best, is either you are very happy being a part of a functioning system. There used to be an insurance office in my neighborhood, Ligon Insurance. And this second generation owner, Billy Ligon, who I loved and everyone loved. And it was this old fashioned office that looked like it had about like 200 file drawers. And Billy would sit there in the corner, and Billy looked like some kind of a fusion of like a biker and a hippie with like long gray hair. And then the office staff consisted of like about five or six, seven really sharp women buzzing around, making sure everything's filed impeccably, answering the phones, and they all seemed to love it. I could have just worked in the corner and sat there and just watched them do their thing. That's very Aquarius 6th when it's working well. When it's not working well, it's like these people are all going to do something and they're going to pick on that person and they're going to create an in-group and an out-group and it's all going to be all this shadow Aquarius bullshit. Well, Pluto's coming. So Pluto's going to drive an evolutionary quest through your house of everyday work. And it's Pluto and Aquarius is pretty much going to be either stand up to the collective, which these days is usually a woke, false collective, pounding values that don't help anyone, or completely establishing yourself as a leader, driving with your consciousness and your choices and your actions and where you place yourself and how you relate to people, a group initiation, a collective initiation, where a group of people choose to work together to grow. All right, one last little bit. And I don't remember what I said about this in the written, but like Taurus, you have a fire sign, a highly individualistic fire sign, on your 12th, Leo. The 12th is the place where things disappear. The 12th is the place, like, when you see a chart of someone who's got like the sun or the moon in the 12th, it's fair to ask them, like, you know, if it was the moon, like, was your mother okay? Like, was she there for you? And by the way, if you have children with the moon in the 12th and your mom, you might say to your kids when they're old enough to answer, like, what do you need me to do for you to have me be here for you a little bit more? Even a 3-year-old, see what they say. Like, what do you need me? What do you need for me, little kid of mine? Anyway, when you have a individualistic fire sign like Leo there, you can feel like you've gone missing. This comports with Aries on the 8th also, right? Because you go missing into a in-laws system till you find yourself and you're like, I'm not them, I'm me. And Leo can have that sense of disappearing generally. So you want to be aware of this. And the nice thing, one of a few nice things, several, it's a pretty good list, about 2023 is Venus retrograde in Leo. So this, I think, will serve to give you a sense of parts of yourself that you forgot about, self-expressive parts of yourself that that you have forgotten about. It's hard times to relax and be self-expressive. And so it's important for all of us, I think, to have some of that. And for some people, it's extremely important. And another one of the characteristics about Virgo is Capricorn on the 5th, the Leo-ish house. Having Capricorn there, that too packs your personal creativity and curiosity, the 5th, into a context framework where there's a lot of expectations and rules and authority and structure, Capricorn. So classic Virgo situation is this, you know, the scene of the four-year-old carrying the groceries. It's not necessary, but there are those parents who are like, you're carrying the groceries. Maybe mom didn't want to touch the groceries, and it's like, oh, I've got a four-year-old. I certainly have bought a lot of diapers and baby formula. Carry the groceries. Or the Virgo child wanting to fit into the adult context as a miniature adult because that wins the adult's approval. All of this, whatever form that takes, like figure those are fictional scenarios, but maybe there's something parallel to that that you experienced. They are all dehydrating of the child play self-expression. I want a color for its own sake, or whatever, quality of children. So Pluto has been through here. Pluto's done a real number on this, which is, I think, a very positive thing for Virgo. Pluto through the 5th in Capricorn has kind of revitalized a child spirit in you. And I think very likely you are less risk averse than you were back in 2008 when this all started, and that you may feel a lot less like you owe people something or everything or all of your creativity. The adventure of the 5th continues. There's a lot of important little minor planets that have more or less just begun their journey, which is going to take a while, across the 5th. Ixion, Quasar, Pholus, Cupido, very slow movers are going to, I think to sum up, because you can't really sum up like four different slow movers in a way that is specifically topical, but I to me it looks like you have a palette of possibilities and possible sources of inspiration and different types of, entirely different types of creative spaces to explore, some of them potentially very, very old. If you're wondering what to do, try cave painting. Find yourself a cave. And make some mud and paint on the wall of the cave. Stuff that old. I don't know what else. I don't know what's older than cave painting. And I would practically do anything to take a walk in that Lascaux cave. And you look at that stuff and you're like, this is art. This is not just somebody like scratching some shit on the wall. Is truly beautiful, but the oldness, the is Capricorn, so it's the use of earthen substances in some way to get your hands into. This is not exactly gardening. I mean, that's I wish I had a garden. It's good for everyone, I think, but this is really about the fabrication of stuff. Build your own guitar. Figure out how to make your own dishes. Something like that. Old stuff. Stuff that existed like before the year 1500. To pick a somewhat random date where nothing plugged in. And there were no telephone calls. And the printing press was special. Printing. That would be Capricorn 5th, like letterpress printing. Some ideas for you. All right. Well, a pleasure as always, to read the Virgo charts. I find it to be one of the most creatively inspiring signs to read, and being of your opposite sign, see something of myself in all of this, and thank you for joining me, and for your time, your business, and most of all, your trust. I realize that you cannot unhear the things I have said, so I try to say them carefully and lovingly, with a bit of that fifth house, take a chance and say it. Okay. Signing off at 6:14 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on a super frigid New York Christmas Eve. I'll catch you over in a different sign or a different place and time. And bye for now. Thank you.